the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome back to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network, where we are about to have a website launch. It sounds like either tonight or tomorrow. My name is Joey. Len is in the other panel showing you the stats card we're going to be giving away, loaded with $100 Canadian worth of Bitcoin. Kudos to our friends over at Bold Bitcoin and, of course, to the good folks over at CoinKite as well. Listen, Len, how are you doing over there? You're hyped up. What is the design on today's card? Is that a flamingo I saw?
It's all the same one. I only got to say, so there'll be nothing spectacular, nothing different. I'm sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen and everybody.
Oh, it's the ostrich. It's a Nostra ostrich. Yeah, okay.
But some people may want something different. Unfortunately, this is the only one I have. No, everything is good over here. I went outside again today and yesterday and the day before that. I'm happy that I didn't get struck down by the global boiling that's going on all around us. So because of that, I guess I'm very, very lucky that I'm still here with us. So yeah, this is good news. Everything is great over here, Joey. You're still, I guess, reeling from what happened last week.
I'm not reeling. I may as well talk about it now. I was going to wait till housekeeping. I just want to say thank you to everybody for the kind words and, you know, the memories and stuff you guys shared of your dogs and stuff when Scoop passed away last week. Incredible, man. The way that a dog not only becomes like part of your family, but really is something that you think about. You don't realize how much, you know. Still, you know, we're thinking about all the good times we have with them, and hearing from all of you different, you know, stories and seeing videos and pictures of your pups, and just, you know, one more time from Len and I and Kenzie and I guess in this case as well, a big thank you. And it's been amazing to grow and see this community, you know, sort of expand over the years. And I forget sometimes that, you know, really there's a lot more friends than enemies out there on Bitcoin Twitter, certainly in the CBP, you know, network realm. So one more time, thanks, guys. And when I get another pop in the wintertime, you'll be the first to know, I'm sure. There'll be plenty more videos and pictures when that time comes.
Did you get them cremated?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and
that's the right thing to do, right? What else do you do? Like, I mean, we took him to the vet. I'll tell you about the process. I mean, as well, we took him to the vet, and my wife and I were, you know, pretty beat up. We're pretty teary eyed. But I gotta say, like, to the folks over at Stone Church Animal Clinic, which is not far from my house, Dr. Harchi over there, consummate professional. Every time I saw him, he was an outstanding vet. Did all the right things for us and for the dog over the years. And this is just another example. Guy knew exactly what to say, knew exactly what the process was going to look like, gave us all the information we needed. And I got to say, like, if you're ever, you know, if you're ever doing that kind of thing for a dog, it is difficult, but it's, you know, it's what you sign up for. That's what I've been saying to everybody since we found out he was sick. That's part of the deal. And whether it's after 7 years or 10 years or 12 or whatever, you have to do it. There is no alternative, you know, unless you go first. So it's better than the alternative. And you just want to have somebody there with you who's professional and knows the drill. So kudos to those guys too. Big thanks to them. They were outstanding all the way through.
Yes, maybe they could sponsor our show moving forward, given that. Anyways, let's move on, Joey. I'm gonna just go off to the boost right away, and then we could go on to
sure.
other.
Sure. So, I want to talk a bit about the schedule this week too, because we do have three other shows coming this week.
Three other?
Well, including Access of Easy. We should mention Access of Easy.
Ah, yes.
We do have this is a three CBP week show or three CBP show week. So we should mention that just before the end, because I know we leave it till the end of the show all the time. Not everyone listens to the end of the show, so we'll get them at the beginning. That way, at least they know that we have other stuff going on.
Let's do it. A lot of content coming out. So we have Wednesday and Thursday. I forget.
I can't remember. I can't remember who's Wednesday. Thursday is Mario Gibney. He's coming on to talk AI again. Wednesday.
I'm busy fiat mining all the time, so I don't know.
Let me pull it up. Let me pull it up. I'll do you a favor here. It is. Oh, it's Mark Morano who wrote. I tweeted this today. Great Reset: The Global Elites and Permanent Lockdowns, which looks like an interesting read. I don't often tune into the Wednesday shows because usually I'm busy. Like I'll take advantage of those nights that you and me switch seats, but I might have to. I'm going to be at the Brick, I think, sitting in kitchen chairs, and my wife wants to try out. But
he's been on the Fox. He's been on CNN and probably a few other places as well. So he's been on quite a few of the big stations down south, and now he's taking a shot to come on one of the biggest stations up north, which is us. So it's good to have him here and get some exposure to the CBP. So yeah, good.
Well, I'm curious as to like what I don't know enough about this guy. And I looked for his Twitter account today when I was doing the tweets for the scheduling notes, and I couldn't find him. But the stuff he's written looks pretty intense, I gotta say. So I'm definitely gonna be listening to that one. I can't wait to see how fast you get the channel demonetized. Should be in the first 15 to 20.
Well, we could have bets on this. And maybe that could be our next way of making money. We'll take a slice of the cut every time.
I have one more thing to say. Big shout out to my guy, Ryan Griggs, who I bought this shirt from, the Regenesance. He's running a regenerative farming operation out in Texas. So this shirt is not cheap. I'll tell you with shipping and stuff, but I want to support that kind of operation when we can. We obviously have Texas Slim coming on. We had Mitch and Ray in the past. Anyone who's doing that kind of farming work, and I got to show you the background. You're going to love it.
Wait, turn more. It's hard to see. Turn some more.
Can you see it?
It's a bull in a bottle. I can't read what it says, though.
It says raw is law on a bottle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that's a big thing these days. I see a lot
so
of
tweets slick. About this. So slick.
Yeah.
Anyway, so shout to those guys, too. Nice operation. We got to have Ryan on at some point. We're going down this farming road here. We'll have to bring him on, too, and see what's going on the south of the border.
Yeah, well, we're getting a lot of guests along those lines. So anyways, let's go to the boost. And starting off, I just say it was the top five boosts in terms of sats. We read them off. So Mickles boosted 888 sats. And he was commenting on our last show where we talked about debt and Bitcoin. That was in the title. And he says, reading the title, I thought it would be going to be about advice on buying Bitcoin with debt personally, but it was ready for a lecture. And he's saying, cheers. No, if you want to do that, go right ahead, especially in this high interest rate environment.
NFA, baby. NFA.
I mean, I'm not telling you to do it, but if you want to do it, all the more power to you. Joe Ronan boosts 1,000 stats. Stay humble, stack sats. 100% agree with Joe. That. Doug and Roop, 1,050 sats. Really happy with my start 9. Couldn't manage to get a node running on my standard laptop. Have a Lightning node running, but need to dig deeper as currently fumbling in the dark and not routing any transactions through it. Now, I just want to state, in order to have transactions routed through it, you have to connect to one of the bigger nodes out there and create as many channels as possible, because that way you'll be potentially being used as a routing channel between point A to point B. So you have to open up a ton of channels with the big boys and have lots of liquidity, and that's how you could do it. So
complicated process, man, running nodes and stuff like that. I am glad that Doug and Roop sent that comment, because I did want to hear a little bit about the start 9 and the process there. They're popular machines in the Bitcoin space, getting more popular now that Umbral has kind of fallen from grace a little bit. So I expect that to continue.
And Bobo Tummy boosts 1,051 sats. One more sat than Doug and Roop. when are we going to get another Bear Den episode? Keep up the great content. Listening from YEG.
How many are left? How many bears are left out there? I mean, BlackRock has a spot ETF now. I don't think there's many bears left in the Bitcoin space. I do think Eric Townsend would be a good guest. And to friend of the show, Mike Green's great credit, he did offer to introduce us. And I believe that he did. And Eric, not interested, apparently. I don't know. Macro Voices is a huge podcast, might be the biggest one in terms of markets and economics. So I'm not surprised, but I think he might be the last bear standing with a real unique case as to why Bitcoin won't work. And I think he bases it around the technology aspect, basically that there's some greater than 0% likelihood that something better than Bitcoin will usurp it in the future. We've heard this before. It may happen. I personally don't think that that's likely, but I'd be curious to hear what he says. He's a smart guy and also a Canadian, Len. So another guy we could always get on the show. I think we got to hit the next, play plateau, I think, before we can snipe Townsend. But that'll be a good show eventually.
I'll queue up the bots so we get to that number. We got the Outlander BC boosts 7,778 sats. Writes in, appreciate the variety of topics you two discuss together and with your guests. Thank you very much. And so all appreciate those stats we received, we're going to be donating them again, just like we did last week. It's Bitcoin Jungle has recommended we donate it to, there's a lady in Costa Rica that's been very helpful to the community. So last week he did that. We'll do the same this week. So there we go.
Sure. Why not? Yeah. I don't have any better ideas. Maybe, who's having some health problems on is Chris Belcher, apparently. And he was on the show once upon a time when we were a lot smaller. And maybe we could find out from Odell or something if he's got a little thing going, because they were talking about it on TFTC last week. I know he's been on our program, so I got to see what the status of that is. There's still some debate about whether or not that's a cry for help or an actual health problem, because there was no signature, no signed message, which is unusual for a guy with his background, right? So yeah, anyway, we'll talk about that maybe offline, but something to consider anyways. And if anyone else knows anything about that, hit us up, let us know.
Yeah, for next week, we could definitely donate to him or something along those lines, as long as we can confirm it to be true and he's accepting. But anyways, anything else you want to knock off the list before we move on?
No, I think that's it. I think we're good to go if you're ready to go.
Well, oh, remember
sponsors.
This is
maybe the sponsors. We should probably do the sponsors.
Oh, man, you're right.
One is
this thing took me off my game.
EasyDNS, Mark and team, of course, uncensorable content. We know that, but you guys are about to see what Mark can do for you, because we're gonna roll our website out. I think it sounds like tonight, if he has it his way, and if we're ready to start posting articles there. So, you know, if you got to host the website, do domain hosting there. Obviously, you can buy a domain through his DNS as well. He'll help you migrate all your stuff over if you're coming from somewhere else, whether it's email or web services. If you want to do VPS, you can do that too. So Noster, BTC Pay Server, your node, whatever. Okay, it's all available through Mark and over at his DNS. And if you use our code CBP Media, or just tell Mark we sent you, he'll give you 50% off your first purchase, which is sick, man. You can't beat that. And yeah, I do see in the chat, Boomer beat me to the website. I don't care. You know, I don't care. Our website's going to be superior, Boomer. I'm not afraid to say that on this air. I'm calling my shot now. Go ahead, Len. Who's the other sponsor?
Bull Bitcoin. And I want to thank them very much. Before I even read off why it is they're sponsoring us or what they do, they provided $50 Canadian to add to the giveaway today. Just want to thank them for that. But also, great place to buy Bitcoin, and you could sell your Bitcoin over there at Bull Bitcoin. You can live on the Bitcoin standard in that you could pay your bills in Bitcoin. You could buy gift cards with Bitcoin and spend those gift cards in the real world, if that's such a thing to do in a real world. I don't know, because I'm always here in my basement. You could buy Bitcoin. You could buy liquid Bitcoin. You could buy Lightning Bitcoin. You could also buy KYC-free Bitcoin with over 6,000 locations throughout Canada. That's more locations than there are Tim Hortons in Canada, if you believe that. You could trade your dirty fiat at a Canada Post, and through that whole process, you could get KYC-free Bitcoin. Use our referral code below, and what you do, if you do and you fund your account, you get $21 added to your account, but you've got to give up your telephone number to do that. So don't game the system. You got to give up your telephone number.
Yeah, it's been a blast working with those guys so far, and I got to say, you guys are really putting a lot of volume through, so keep it up, man. And, you know, we should mention that we are thrilled, again, like Len said, to just give away money every week, which is great. So if you guys like the way this is going, we can keep it going too. I don't see why not.
What's the price in Bitcoin? Do you happen to have that handy?
I of course. Yeah.
Well, in Canadian, it's 38,513. So we've gone down.
29,199 US.
That's a good stacking time.
We're kicking around that 29, 30, you know, ish.
It's a stable coin.
For about a month, right? Maybe a little longer. So
it's a stable coin, more stable than what's going on in Japan, thanks to the Bank of Japan. But we'll talk about that later. Number one,
sure.
Let's move on to Bitcoin related news. I think the first thing we should talk about is what's going on with Coinbase. And Coinbase, sure. A lot of things have been going on with them recently. The Wells notice was handed out to them, and then the SEC then sued them, or at least launched a lawsuit against them back in June 6th, to be specific. Well, today there was a story from the Financial Times, and it mentioned that the SEC asked Coinbase to halt the trading of all assets on their platform except for one, which is Bitcoin. And we've been talking back and forth offline in our group chat. This request, when did it come out? That's the question. I think it would happen sometime after the Wells notice was issued back in March 22nd, but before the lawsuit was launched on June 6th. I could be wrong, but that's my feeling. Maybe you have something different, and maybe everybody listening in might have it, their own opinion. But
I just want to, can I just add that the Wells notice, I was listening to our old shows today. The Wells notice came
March 22nd.
Yeah. So the suit was June 13th.
Yeah, I got June
13th. June 13th show, we talked about it. And we said on that program that the Coinbase, you know, executive team, Paul Grewal and Armstrong specifically, were doing the media tour saying that they didn't have guidance. and they weren't getting clarity. And what did we say that day? Do you remember what we said? We said in the interview he did with the Wall Street Journal, he clearly says that they got guidance, and the guidance was everything that's not Bitcoin is a security, and they just didn't listen. And now suddenly today, there's this flood of people saying the exact same thing that we said 2 months ago. So kudos to you. Good job by you. Good job by me. Good job by us.
Well, in this particular case, they were, this is according to Financial Times article. Now, Financial Times in the past has written some things that have deemed to be not truthful. So take this all with a grain of salt. I believe this to be true, but I have no verification to confirm this. But the Financial Times article is claiming that 13 shitcoins and what they claim to be, quote, mostly lightly traded, end quote, were identified as securities. So these are the ones that I guess the SEC is really looking at this particular moment in time, or at least at the time when they were talking with Coinbase, as the ones that are irking them and they want something to be done. And if all this is to be true, again, like I don't really know because Financial Times, but if it is to be true, Coinbase obviously didn't act on this. They didn't do a thing. They didn't delist anything. They're still doing business today the same way they're doing business 3 months ago, 6 months ago, 1 year ago. But it shows off a couple of things to me. Coinbase is a company that is profit-driven. Now, this makes sense. They're publicly traded, so they are beholden to their shareholders to earn as much profit as possible to make their shareholders happy. And that's the board. They assign Brian Armstrong there and their team to ensure that this happens. So this is their MO. They want to make as much money as possible. But the flip side, they're not a Bitcoin-related company. Very long time ago, that was the only place that at least I thought I could buy Bitcoin. I probably could have bought it other places, but it was the one that was easiest and it was most prominent Bitcoin-ish exchange that I was able to purchase Bitcoin from. So just looking at that, their MO is all about money. And that is fine, but they are going to feel the consequences from that. But the second thing I look at this, the SEC does not look at Bitcoin in a negative view, at least right now. They may change their viewpoint moving forward, but at this particular moment, the SEC wants to do absolutely nothing to nail Bitcoin to the cross. That is not what they want to do, but things could change moving forward. They're driven politically. Plus, Gensler's not going to be there forever. Whoever replaces him might have a totally different viewpoint on Bitcoin. So what we have today is a very dynamic situation that could change moving forward. What are your thoughts on this, Joey?
I think you're right about some of the things, but I disagree with you about others. Mainly, you're 100% correct that Coinbase is, you know, profit driven for sure. No doubt about that. The question is, like, they claim in all their public facing statements to be driven by, you know, democratizing finance and tokenifying, whatever. There's a word for this. I don't know what it is, but you know, to this idea that everything's got to be tradable on Coinbase and that these things are not securities. They don't represent securities. Clearly they do. I think there is some kind of interest in the, you know, development teams of these tokens. There's no doubt about that. You know what I'm curious about though? Coinbase seems to me like the kind of company who could do custody really well and work with investing companies to do custody for high net worth individuals. They don't seem interested in doing that. I don't hear much about their custody service at all. They had this layer two rug pull today with the, what was it, the bald coin or whatever it was called. Like the thing went basically up and down in one candle to zero. Instead of just putting in Lightning, they did this. Don't understand why they've done this, but that was a decision they made. It's par for the course with them. So they don't seem interested in Lightning. They don't seem interested in custody. To me, those are two things that are money-making ventures, though maybe not as lucrative as, you know, listing shit coins, having your venture arm invest in them and then dumping them on retail to really make a killing. It seems to me like they're not really about supporting their investors or their users, I guess, in this case. Some of them would be their investors too, I'm not sure. They're not really about that. And they're not really about providing services that make sense for people who hold Bitcoin either. So at this point, what is their model? What is their model going to be in 2 years? Like, do you have any idea like where they're going? I can't figure it out myself. I have no idea.
Well, staking as a service is something that they would like to keep.
Like 2 hours ago, they just said that those tokens are like taxable under some kind of different jurisdiction too, right? So the problem is they're not the best at anything except listing garbage. And so even that, like even then Binance is probably better, but you can't get there if you're in the US, at least allegedly, right? So why would you be someone who's like, yeah, Coinbase is the company I want to work for, work with, invest in, when they're not the best at anything anymore? They're being legislated out of business, it seems like. Now, I'm not pro or anti that. In fact, I think Coinbase should fight all this stuff because I don't want governments making these decisions unilaterally. But I mean, to me, the writing is at least a little bit on the wall. Now, the other side of that coin, if you're not of that opinion that the writing is on the wall, maybe you say that the company just needs to keep treading water until Gensler goes, or there's a change in leadership at the White House, or something happens to the dollar or whatever that makes this stuff more palatable for the general population. And you know, in so doing makes it more palatable for elected officials as well. You're starting to see that already. It's interesting to see that, you know, this will probably be the first election where someone on the debate stage talks about Bitcoin or crypto, or, you know, one of the two, in a way that's like really not productive, but, you know, like substantial. There'll be some substantial discussion that the moderators will know something about it, I'm sure. And they're probably going to be young enough to ask good follow-up questions. Anyway, I'm rambling, but all that to say that, I think Coinbase really has a serious choice to make here. And it's either you got to be the best at the stuff that you know you're going to be able to do, or risk the entire business on something you don't know is going to be legal inside of 3 or 5 years. To me, one of those is a better choice. And it's not like, by the way, companies that are doing this are unsuccessful. Unchained Capital, great example. They're doing custody for people, you know, multi-sig custody, high net worth custody, wealth transfer. I just heard a great podcast, Marty's The Last Trade with Morgan Rochard, who's actually Pierre Rochard's wife, who we had on the show. And she's talking about how financial advisors can provide custody services and wealth transfer services and things that Bitcoiners think are just not going to be necessary in this, like, you know, anti-state world. But the fact of the matter is there's a reality that exists now where these things are necessary and they're important. And I think that Coinbase has ignored these things in favor of the shiny object in the room. They've done this for the last decade or so, and now the chickens might be coming home to roost, as they say. So I don't know. What do you think? Is it a feasible business 2 years, 5 years? To me, it looks less and less so, but I don't want to underweight their political influence and their war chest, both of which are probably way bigger than I realize.
Custody service. I know you're not really big on that, but their custody service, they provide services to a lot of companies out there, a lot of big companies. Grayscale, one, ETFs. MicroStrat. Well, the ETFs. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about existing companies that use their service and soon to be companies.
ShakePay
uses it, but it's a minnow. I'm looking. MicroStrategy is one that uses them. So there are companies out there. Kraken uses them. PayPal uses them. Square, Morgan Stanley. So there's quite a few that use them to custody their Bitcoin. So they have a reputation out there, at least with these very large players, of being providing good and safe services. And I suspect they're going to be able to get more customers of that ilk under their custody service moving forward. So that's something that they have that, at least for the time being, it works. And nobody's gotten rugged. So they'll be able to earn revenue through that model.
If Coinbase has to register as a bank at some point to do the securities offerings and stuff like that, they'll be subject to that capital ratio law. And then all those big clients suddenly become difficult to deal with, right? I think. I don't know. To me, there's like so many moving parts here that it's really hard to say one way or the other. Like, yeah, custody will work, or this will work, or that'll work. There's companies that are doing this stuff really well, and they're doing it like Unchained is a good example, right? They don't actually hold your Bitcoin. They hold one key and then two other keys are somewhere else. Or I don't know, who's another good example of this? Like I'd be curious what the rules for ShakePay are, because ShakePay holds Bitcoin, Ether, and cash on behalf of its client base, right? So are they subject to those capital ratio requirements? Do we have that here? I don't even know what the capital ratio requirements are over here.
Well, they're not a bank, you know, no.
No, they're not, but they're pretty close. I mean, they got a debit card, they got a savings account, they had yield up until 6 months ago, right? And we talked about why they probably got rid of that product. So yeah, interesting, man. I don't know. Coinbase, like, to me, continues to just be this like wunderkind who completely dropped the ball, like fumbled a huge lead. And, you know, talk about dropping it on the 1 yard line. These guys really, I think, were so close and just blew it. confrontational, adversarial with Gensler, adversarial with regulators. Armstrong cannot do any himself or the industry or his company any favors in front of a crowd. And, you know, now he's paying the price for it. We talked at the time, like, how bad that Wall Street Journal interview was. It was 28 minutes. It was brutal. Like, that guy should have been better prepared. And the interviewer didn't know anything. The interviewer couldn't even push back on most of the stuff he was saying, which, by the way, was, I thought, at least in a few instances, self-incriminating. Like, he was really pinning himself down. And now those clips are making the rounds, Len. What can I say? You know, it's not a surprise. The internet finds everything just like a few months after we find it. That's all.
It's undefeated. Let's move on. Let's talk about Marathon Digital Holdings, the mining company up there. And you know what? Second week in a row, we're talking about a specific mining company. But the reason why I want to bring them up is because, well, they have ownership in some ownership. It's approximately 30%. That's the number being thrown around in a company called Auradine. Now, Auradine, why am I bringing this up and their connection with Marathon? Well, they created the world's first 4-nanometer chip that's going to be used for Bitcoin mining. This is huge. This is part of their Teraflux product range of Bitcoin miners. The systems will be ready to ship for early access customers in Q3, with volume production starting Q4 of this year. And this is a huge jump from where we used to be. 5 nanometers was the previous benchmark, and we couldn't get any smaller than that. Now it's 4 nanometers. Block announced that they had a 5-nanometer chip not too long ago. Canaan has one, Bitmain uses one. So that was like the barrier. Now they're down to 4 nanometers. This is groundbreaking stuff. And the people might be wondering, why does a smaller chip really matter? Well, it improves performance because the smaller chips, you could pack more transistors in a particular area, which means you could have faster and more powerful chips. And also the electrons have to travel a shorter distance, and which means that everything is just a little bit faster. Also, this reduces the cost because the cost of manufacturing is reduced, and it's because it's determined by the size of the chip or the wafer that it's made on. By reducing the size of the chip, the same amount of silicon could be produced on more chips, which lowers the cost per chip. This is absolutely massive, but it comes with a drawback: heat. Heat becomes a bigger problem when you're packing more in a smaller area. So this is, you know, it comes at a cost, but this may lead to even higher hash rates in the very near future. I don't have any specifics what's going to be the numbers that they're throwing around, but this is something to be looked at, not just because of what the 4-nanometer thing, but this was designed and to be manufactured in the United States. I like this on all fronts.
It's a big deal. One of the things we don't talk about that much is the effect that the race to the bottom in terms of, I guess I should actually race to the top, in terms of efficiency for miners is going to have on the more broad landscape of electronics. These things are specialized, of course, but there's going to be breakthroughs, I think, Len. I think it's possible that some of the breakthroughs come from Bitcoin mining. As the stakes go up, you know, let's say, for example, there's a nation state that adopts, you know, a real nation state that's got a lot of firepower, not in El Salvador, you know, God bless El Salvador. Don't get me wrong. It's a great story. But, you know, if someone like, a European country, Germany, France, America, even Canada decides one day that they're going to mine and they actually put a little bit of capital into R&D, state capital into R&D, you're talking about, you know, that's a significant undertaking. And I think that there's precedent for government-funded R&D to really knock people's socks off in some scenarios. I mean, I know not everyone thinks we went to the moon, but if you do, NASA is a good example of that. We've obviously got Oppenheimer in theaters, nuclear weapons, another example of that. You know, for better or worse, government does a good job with this stuff when the stakes are pretty high. And if they start mining Bitcoin, you can imagine that at that time, the stakes be pretty high. So I'd be looking forward to seeing what kind of breakthroughs come from this. As far as this particular chip story, I mean, I don't have anything to add to that. You gave a pretty good technical breakdown. You know more about that stuff than me. It's cool. I guess does this mean that I'm going to be able to get what's now a 1-gen old miner, like an S19 on the cheap pretty soon? Like, when am I going to be able to score one of these things for like, you know, a couple $100? That's what I'm waiting for. Where's that story?
Wait for the halving to take place. And that's going to be a drastic, it's going to be seismic impact towards the mining industry, because it's going to be less lucrative to mine. And who knows, if the price of Bitcoin doesn't rip, there may be a lot of opportunity to buy stuff like that. Also, there's somebody up there, we talked in a previous episode, that they're able to reduce the hashboards from 3 to 1 in the S19s, and you could use the 120 volt power supply from the old S9. So you could use that, and you just plug it into your wall. You don't have to get a 220 volt outlet. So maybe there's opportunities out there very, very soon that you could use an S19 that has been drastically reduced by using one hashboard. But you're still, I remember it was around 35 terahash per second, which is phenomenal in comparison to an S9. So very, very efficient. Anyways, Bhutan, we talk about them. And Singapore, we talk about them too, the Singapore dollar. Well, anyways, Bitdeer. And this is a company that is headed by the Chinese billionaire Jihan Wu. If you read the Block Size Wars, you know him, what he's all about. Well, they've begun to raise money for the Bitcoin Green Bitcoin, BGB. That's very odd. It's a fund aimed to increase Bitcoin mining operations in Bhutan. And according to a report, the duration of the BGB fund is going to be 6 years, which plans to raise $80 million for the first phase of construction. So what this is, this fund has a minimum investment threshold of $5 million for investors. So you have to have a lot of money that you want to invest in this. And through this fund, Bitdeer aims to establish mining projects with an estimated total hash rate of 20 exahash in Bhutan, which is a decent amount of hash rate. And in May, the company has announced a partnership with Bhutan's state-owned investment firm, Druk Holding and Investments. We talked about this when this was announced, when Bhutan was discovered to have started mining Bitcoin back when the price of Bitcoin was $5,000. At that time in May, they raised up to $500 million from the international community. And for those who aren't aware, Bhutan is mining Bitcoin with renewable energy. So there is a lot of money, you have to $5 million if you want to invest in this type of thing. But there's going to be a lot of money now that's going to be pouring in to Bhutan to set up mining operations. Great stuff. Yeah, I hope Bhutan and the companies that invest in this make a bank on this, because then this is a model that could be copied throughout the world. And if you have excess energy, well, why not mine Bitcoin? It only makes sense to me.
That's a good question. I think the most frustrating thing about this story is that it feels like it could have been us, you know, like we could have done something. We don't have the energy, maybe capacity or the political will. But, you know, to me, there's so much opportunity in Bitcoin mining right now because the price is so low and it feels like we're still pretty early. I'm reminded of stuff that you and I take for granted, people in the chat, you know, listening, watching, take for granted when it comes to Bitcoin and economics and monetary policy and, you know, what is money and what is value and things of this nature. It's so early and yet we're squandering opportunities. Today I saw the PM in Hamilton talking about new housing projects. They're going to build 214 houses or something like that, and some of them are just like fixed up. I know, it's like trying to fight a forest fire with a super soaker, you know, like it's an impossible task. So I don't know, man. I'm happy for these guys. I'm curious to see how it goes. I hope it's a success story like El Salvador was. I'm not going to eat my words on this one. I'm going to, you know, hope for the best, and I think it'll probably turn out fine. But I'm just curious as to why we can't find the political will. Like, are we really such a divided society, such a short-sighted society that we can't do these things? We could. And it's not just in Bitcoin. Like, you could say that about a lot of different policy positions we've taken over the last 5 or 6 years. So sad, but happy for those guys. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, Ontario, they're getting to a point where we're going to have a deficit in the not-too-distant future for electricity. That's why they're building a plant out in, I think, Darlington. I could be wrong. I forget where it is. But anyways, they're putting nuclear plant 1 in Ontario, though, hopefully, just to keep this thing moving along, especially since we're trying to electrify so many things, like cars.
Let me ask you a question. There's 21 people here. Should we do the giveaway?
Let's do it. Let's do that.
Yeah, fuck it. Okay, let me pull the names up. I want to reward these people who are in the chat at the beginning, because I feel like a lot of the come latelys might show up at minute 50.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hold on.
With that strategy. So I bought the Bitcoin this morning. So without giving the specifics, it's around 250,000 sats. It was $100 Canadian. It got me around 250,000 sats. That's what's at stake here. So good luck to everybody, and let's rock and roll.
God, that wheel's
smell. Sound effects. It's good. I could hear it, Joey. This is great. This is going to go for a while.
Bet coin.
Just do it. Keep going. Coin. Just keep going. So it's until somebody shows up, and then, you know, if bet coin's there, we'll just stop this. So click remove.
Okay.
And then roll it again. We'll just roll through this quickly. So
I'll just write the names in the chat here.
Man of Steel. Remove. Keep going. If he's there, he'll come out. There you go. Keep going.
Let me write the name down.
Okay. I'll write it.
Okay. Here we go. You gonna write him down? You
can
write.
Yeah, I'll write it. We'll try to streamline this whole process. The audio side quite pissed off with doing this. Sorry about that, channel, ladies and gentlemen.
Chase Hoddle. Chas Hoddle. Okay. Remove. Spin. This is great. We love this.
And unfortunately, there's not that many people here, so we're gonna be spinning for a while until we find somebody.
Chuck M. Chuck M has been in the chat before.
Keep going. If he shows up, like if he's here, fine, we're good. But if not, we're
no problem. People love this. Yeah, I see in the chat, Boomer, great pod. Yeah,
you know, we could just stop this and keep and do this again later on.
NB Lumberjack. Great name. I don't know who that is. I have no idea who that is. I don't know any all these names. Discord names. I know. Here we go. Just giving money away. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants it today.
Show up to this live stream.
Come on, baby. Let's go. Ish.ca. Who could that be? Could be anyone.
Oh, I put it.
Ish.ca.
Sorry, I spelled it wrong. I corrected it.
Speed running here now.
Yeah, this is the way to do it. We're on ultra low latency as well.
Juan of the North. Great name.
Paulie's asking if all these are bots. They might be, but you have to show up to the chat.
There's only 20 people in the chat. You got to be in the chat. Yeah, that's the rules. Hodler's official. I know who that is. I wonder if they're here. That's okay. I can't remember his name. The guy who sells the jerseys.
Okay, we're running through this. Unfortunately, there's not selecting the right name. This is not right.
You can see the wheel. The wheel has 126 entries. Joe Roman,
and he gives us the boost almost every week. Oh man. Okay, sorry, Joe. You're not gonna.
He's gonna hear his name, and
yeah,
the boosts are gonna stop.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Yay, all right. Yeah. He's okay. There. Okay. I don't want to say his name, but just send us a DM on Telegram, not Telegram, sorry, Discord, we'll get you this thing. So yeah.
Joe, you made it, Joe.
All right. So congratulations. You're the winner.
I always forget there's a bit of a lag between us and them, right? At least like
it's not much. It's ultra low.
It's enough that he grabbed his name, put it in there three times.
Ah, he just sent me a DM. So yeah, it confirmed it is him. Okay. Awesome job. Let's move on. Still so much more to talk about. You were talking about El Salvador. I'm gonna bring up a story about El Salvador that's very, very interesting. You ever hear of the volcano tokens, Joey? Because I've never heard of it before this week. But
the tokens or the bonds?
Same thing.
Okay.
Same thing, but they're selling it as tokens. So it's very interesting stuff that's going on in El Salvador. Right now, they're setting up a mining infrastructure over there. Oh, before I want to preface this, I got all this information from Stacker News, and a guy by the name of Mallard's Head posted this. I want to give him a shout out because he did a great job for this write-up. So anyways, back to this. In El Salvador, they're setting up mining infrastructure. And on top of that, they're creating an independent mining pool. The name of this pool, it's going to be known as ES Pool. And it's expected the hash rate for this pool to surpass around 1.3 exahash per second. I checked my node yesterday. What is the global hash rate? It was reported around 440 exahash per second. So there you go. You'll have an idea how much Bitcoin they'll be able to mine on a given day. 240 megawatts of renewable energy will be used to support the pool. And that's a lot of energy. $1 billion, $1 billion has been earmarked for this project. Some of the money is going to be used to buy 15,000 ASICs. And I checked yesterday too, you can get used S19 J Pros around $1,000 each. So it gives you an idea how much they could buy with that how much it's going to cost for those 15,000 ASICs. The money has come from 13 investors so far, the largest of which is Tether. Interesting. So the annual split is going to be 23% to El Salvador, 27% to the investors, and 50% reinvested in mining and energy. So what the investors are buying into are volcano tokens. It's a tokenized security, and this will be done through Bitfinex. Bitfinex is owned by Ifinex. Ifinex also owns Tether. So there's a connection here. Investors will need to register an account with Bitfinex Securities that will allow one person, anybody, to buy the tokens on their platform. And this will all be done through, interestingly enough, through the Liquid Network. So it's going to be done on Liquid, the Bitcoin sidechain. The Volcano's tokens, the value right now is going to be $100 US per token. That's what it is right now. So of the $1 billion of the tokens sold, $500 million is going to be earmarked to build Bitcoin City and its geothermal energy infrastructure. The remaining $500 million is going to be used to buy Bitcoin, the asset, and lock that up for 5 years. The bonds themselves will now have a 10-year maturity. Now, this is something that's a little bit fucked up. The Volcano tokens, they're denominated in U.S. dollars. There's no guarantee that this is going to follow the price of Bitcoin. The coupon pays 6.5% annually for the 10 years. And remember that $500 million is locked up for 5 years. Once it's unlocked, it will be used to pay the original $500 million the loan that they earmarked to build a Bitcoin city. The remaining will be used to pay the Volcano token holders as a dividend over the final years of the 10-year bond lifespan. Hopefully the price of Bitcoin goes up or this thing is going to go bust. The last thing that's very interesting, the Bitcoin city is located in an area, this I had no idea, is located in an area that China wanted to build their Belt and Road Initiative. China, they're trying to grow their influence in Latin America, including El Salvador. And in fact, recently, late last year, they offered to buy up all of El Salvador's outstanding debt. So this connection here is worrisome because I'm wondering if this thing doesn't pan out, China might be there to pay and pick up the bill, but then there's going to be something owed to China. And if Bitcoin is involved in here in some way, shape, or form, I don't know, man. It seems kind of sketchy to me. And securities, tokens on Liquid, I'd rather buy Bitcoin. I don't know why anyone would invest in this, but that's just my two cents.
Hasn't this always been the case, though? Like, hasn't this always been the commentary? Like, why? If the thing is, like, if you're an outside observer, let's say you're not even a Bitcoiner, you're an outside observer, you keep on hearing from the Bitcoin crowd that Bitcoin is going to get El Salvador off the IMF tit. They're going to be able to man their own wheel as far as their finances and their debt structure and all that stuff. And then things are going so well 2 years later that they have to issue a security token denominated in US dollars. Like that's not a sellable story, is it? And, you know, that's for a non-Bitcoiner. No Bitcoiner. I mean, unless you get like a physical certificate with this or some kind of like collectible, I would never buy one of these things because, like you said, you'd rather buy Bitcoin instead. And that's also helping, by the way, if you're pumping the price of Bitcoin or whatever, it's good for the country. I don't know what the case is to buy one of the bonds, one of the tokens. I don't like the China connection. I don't like the Liquid thing. And I can see Mike in the chat saying there's a Blockstream connection there too. Why is Blockstream getting involved in this? Like, why? I don't understand. You know, there's better ways to do this. This is why is there so many revolving doors here? On network, off network, tokens, securities, dollars, Bitcoin. Like, why?
At the time, Samson Mao was still working for Blockstream. Now he's
Jan 3.
I'm wondering if that has any connection with all this. Maybe it does. I don't know. It seems odd that this, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth. And I mentioned, I'd rather buy Bitcoin than invest in this. But one thing, the tokens, they could lead to getting citizenship in El Salvador. So if you're trying to get citizenship over there, the ownership of these tokens, I'm not sure what the number would be. But
you can already do that, though. You can already buy a passport in El Salvador with just, you know, quote unquote investment, buying a property or making a payment, whatever. Like, I think it's like $25,000 US, right? Or something like that. It's not even that much.
I don't know what that is. Like, maybe they'll be mothballing that and going ahead with this as a way to,
say what the offering price is on the tokens.
$100 per token, right? $100 US.
That's what it is, yeah. Okay. Did you say that? Yeah, so, I might have missed that. Okay.
So it may go up, it may go down. But in my opinion, it's not going to follow the price of Bitcoin exactly. There's going to, like, any. It can't. Yeah, right. Like,
there can't be a secondary market. Like what modern market is going to establish a secondary for those tokens? That's clearly a security, right? Like, that's an obvious security.
No, they say it is.
That's what I mean. So, why? Who's going to, you can't do secondary sales. So, how did this happen? Like, I don't know. Like, is Bukele losing his way? Like, you know, dare I say, I'm not sure. Things seem to have been going well for the guy. And now he's, you know, this is not the path you want to go down. I'm not one of these people who thinks he should be, you know, giving spa days to every, you know, mass murderer he catches. Don't get me wrong. I'm with him on a lot of that stuff, but this is bad. I think that's bad.
Yeah, it's not the greatest.
I think it's bad. I think it's bad. You're saying it leaves sour taste. I think it's like, this is bad. That's a bad situation. Yeah.
I agree. Anyways, let's move on. Bitcoin Knots. And Bitcoin Knots is, for people who are unaware, it's a combined Bitcoin node and wallet. It's available for Windows, Mac OS, Linux, and the source code is also available for on GitHub. And why am I bringing this up? Well, Luke-Jr. or Luke Dashier, depending on how you want to pronounce his name, he posted on Noster that there is a security vulnerability that was found with Bitcoin Knots. So pay attention, Bitcoin Knots users. This doesn't impact those that use the GUI interface. And so if you're using that, you're okay. But he does talk about, if you're in doubt, the workaround right now to stop these restrictions that could lead to, well, this vulnerability is to delete any RPC users that can't be trusted with full access. He says that a fix will be included in the upcoming Knots version 25. He says full disclosure will be after everybody has a reasonable opportunity to upgrade. And that's a reasonable way of approaching this. And he says, no, this is not how he was hacked 7 months ago. Of note, I took a look to see what is the current version of Knots. It's now 23.0. So I guess then this update is going to come in version 25. So maybe 24 is just about to be released, and then 25 is going to have the fix. I'm just guessing on this. But either way, if you're running Bitcoin Knots, there is a security vulnerability with that. So if you're using the GUI interface, you're okay. If not, you may want to take precautions because you might get rugged from this.
Why would you use this wallet?
It's a node/wallet combination.
Why this is one thing I want to know, and you might be better suited to tell me this than most people, because you are
I never use Knots, so
there's a good way to put this, because I think this is a good quality you have. You're unwilling to compromise for the latest and greatest in terms of features and stuff like that. DriveChain is a great example, right? Might add some functionality to Bitcoin. You don't want to do it. Ordinal, same thing, right? Don't fuck with my money is what you always say. What is the rationale for switching off of a reliable node software to this? Why would you, like, if you're running a node, the node is really just the back end of some other piece of software that's probably better than this. So Sparrow is better. Nunchuck is better. Blue and Green Wallet, better. Why would you go to this? I don't understand this. Like, I'm using the same stuff that I've used as far as like desktop wallets. Like, I'll only ever use Sparrow. I'm only ever going to use Sparrow. I don't know why you'd use anything else. It doesn't make sense to me to jump ship for something that's maybe not new. Maybe new is the wrong word. So I'm judging by the version number. But I mean, by and large, unproven, right? There's not enough user base for an attack to be a worthwhile venture for somebody yet. And it sounds like Luke has found something here 24 versions into the app that's cause for concern. So I just don't understand why you would jump ship. I don't get why you would do this. If you're just running node on your laptop or whatever, maybe unless you're just like fucking around a little bit with a few sats or having some fun with other like new services, which I do sometimes, but I would never do it. Like, I mean, maybe actually, you know what, Len, maybe I would. I don't know. I just, in my head, I just don't think me now, I'd never do something like this. It's not worth the risk. The stuff I have works. The software works. Everything works.
Yeah. So everything you mentioned, like all those programs are all strictly wallets. So that's one thing. Yeah. This Bitcoin Knots is a combination of a node and a wallet. Just like Bitcoin Core.
I know, but the node, that's what I mean, the core. Like if you run Core on another laptop or whatever, like you guys have been bugging me to do for 2 years and I'm still not doing.
You can run a Prune. You don't need very much space to do it.
You don't need anything. I just am lazy and I don't want to do it, but I will at the new house. I'll put something up in the background in the new studio. We'll talk about that later, maybe in the after show. But like you don't need the wallet to also be your node. Like just run a shitty node if you want to do a node. You know what I mean? Like I don't understand why you would use this software. It doesn't make sense to me. Like it there's something.
Core also functions as a wallet as well.
Yeah, so but not could, a not a good core, one. Not a good one though.
It's not recommended, but it is one. So what I'm trying to get at is it has the functionality, just like this has the functionality. I don't know what this offers that Core doesn't offer. Maybe this is more user-friendly than Core is. I don't know because I've never used it. But the functionality of having a wallet and a node together, it exists right now in Bitcoin Core, which is, you know, the base version. Everybody hopefully would have, just good for you, would have tried it out by now. Soon you'll try it out and we'll get you on board.
I'm buying I'm going to get Numbral on sale.
No, you don't even just put it on any computer. You could get it on Windows, iOS, Linux.
Listen, I am planning on, I'll say this on the air right now. I am planning on building out a 4-mic studio a la the Carrazza brothers over at Your Life, Your Terms, Bitcoin themed. And if it's the right guest for the right show, I'll invite them into my home to do an episode of the show. And I'm looking forward to that. And I'll put a note up somewhere. But a laptop note doesn't look good on camera. I need something more aesthetically pleasing.
Well, you could get, if you really wanted to,
a samurai, like a Ronin Dojo or something. Like, those are pretty cool.
No, I was going to say a Raspberry Pi, but, you know, they're very expensive nowadays. But you could get a crappy laptop, and you could decorate it all you want. You can put stickers on it. You can make it look however you want.
You get the boys over at Bull to send me another set of stickers.
Yeah, I mean, you can do whatever you want. There's so many options. Anyway, let's talk about, I guess, a couple more stories. Argentina, they're going to be charging miners more for using electricity. And it's not really like this impact more like, I guess, bit farms and other mining operations that operate in Argentina. But anyways, they're going to be putting new tariffs in place for Bitcoin miners. Right now, it's 5 times the price for Bitcoin miners to use electricity compared to households. And the miners rate, the new rate is going to be 17,000 pesos, Argentinian pesos, which is around $63 per megawatt hour. That just translates to 6.33 cents per kilowatt hour. So it's pretty cheap in comparison to what we pay over here. Residential rates are really, really cheap. It's 1.13 cents per kilowatt hour. So that's very, very cheap. But considering what people earn over there, it's understandable why it's so cheap. The revised rates come into force August 1st, will run until October 31st, and which point it could be changed again. So this came from, it used to be $17 per megawatt hours, then it went up to $48. Now it's above $63. It's continually jumping up significantly. I'm wondering how much this has to do with the IMF. They bailed them out time and time again. And one of the last bailouts they did specifically had wording that they said that their banks weren't going to provide any Bitcoin services to their clients. Now, I'm wondering if this might have something to do with the IMF's urging and if they're twisting their arm to ensure that Bitcoin miners are going to pay more for using electricity. Just I'm thinking out loud here, wondering your thoughts on this.
IMF footprints all over the world these days. Obviously in Africa, Niger at the moment, or Niger, I don't know how to say it, but
Niger.
Niger. You know, there's something going on there too. A lot of people talking about, oh, it's the uranium, it's this, it's that. The uranium doesn't make Niger rich. It's very inexpensive, the uranium they have, because they can't do any of the enrichment there. And I've read this a few places that people are missing that. The thing that Niger has, you know, working against them is this stupid fucking franc system that France and the IMF are for sure running, you know, using to scam these guys for the last century. Show me again, like we talked about this before when we talked about SDRs. Remember we first figured that out like 2 years ago, maybe we started talking about SDRs. And actually I ended up on Phil Gibson's show talking about SDRs too, because he didn't know anything about them at the time. And I think now he's like obsessed with them, or he was for a while. He talks a lot about global financial policy now. He's got a good handle on it. And, you know, I would just point to the same question I asked then. I'll ask it again now. Show me an IMF success story. Show me one. Is there a single success story that the IMF has? They just run debt scams, Ponzi's over and over again with these countries that cannot get out of them. They don't allow for any development. They don't allow for any change in moray to grow a democracy or grow a population that can support a democracy. It has nothing to do, by the way. I see a lot of comments on Twitter that I to be honest, I find very distasteful about this always happens in like predominantly black countries. It's not a race thing. The problem is that if you leave a bunch of people to their own devices and just constantly make sure the resources are scarce, the incentives change. And when those incentives exist to kill each other to eat, there's no time to figure out how to vote. There's no time to figure out how to raise families properly. There's no time to figure out how to build hospitals and things like that. The IMF alleges that it's helping in all these different scenarios. They try and spread democracy. They, you know, the UN has many arms that are not the IMF to do things like humanitarian work and help these people. And yet, I would also say that it's very hard to point to any successes they've had either. So what am I left to think here as a kind of an impartial third-party observer? It's a scam. I think this is a scam. And Len, I agree with you. I do believe this has something to do with the IMF. I think people who don't think it's IMF related are, you know, head under a rock types or head in the sand types. It's hard for me to imagine that they're not involved in this or even, you know, even worse, driving the issue. It seems to me that that's always what they're doing all around the world and have been for a long time.
A bunch of no coiners. Let's move on to
Alex Gladstein, by the way, if you like, people love him, hate him. I know Jaime, who's a great friend of the show, doesn't like the guy very much. Looks like on Twitter anyway, doesn't like the guy very much. But I would just suggest like reading some of his tweets. He's got some good perspective, good historical perspective on like when this kind of stuff has happened in the past. Look at the examples. Look at the similarities. This is not a new playbook. This is a, you know, oft employed set of instructions that seems to be in play again here at some level.
If I had to like guess, I think it's more so they disagree on one particular issue and it's what's going on in El Salvador. I don't think that there's, you know, anything else aside from that. Gladstein has his own opinions and Jaime has
Jaime Gladstein. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right,
got it. So they don't gel. I'm talking about their opinions to do with El Salvador. Everything else, I think that maybe they agree upon. I'm guessing. I could be wrong. But let's talk about Clown World News. And the Federal Reserve came out this past week with another rate hike, 25 basis points. I'm not sure if that was expected. I haven't been following this all that much, but the decision was made. The price of Bitcoin changed slightly, whatever it is, what it is. But in the end, now debt is more expensive than it was, say, last week at this time. So right. It is what it is. The Biden administration, they're still moving ahead forward with the student repayment plan, you know, because that's coming up. The student loan repayment is going to have to start up very soon. But they came up with a very interesting way of approaching this. And it's going to be an income-driven student debt repayment plan. So the income threshold to qualify for $0 payments has been increased from 150% to 225% of the federal poverty guidelines. So, which translates to an annual income of $32,805 for a single borrower or $67,500 for a family of four. And the education department estimates that this is going to impact more than 1 million additional borrowers who would then qualify for this $0 payment plan. So that's not really a lot of people, but it's 1 million people that are going to qualify for this $0 payment plan. And some of the borrowers could have their payments cut in half when this comes into effect. And yeah, it is what it is. And they also say that with this new plan, the unpaid interest will not accrue if a borrower makes their full monthly payments. That's regardless of whatever you have to owe. But they're still looking at this. This is a political hot potato. And there's so many people out there that probably would vote for the government right now that's sitting in the White House. And they're going to try to put in policy that's going to pander to those groups of people because they want to retain those votes moving forward. But whatever decision they make, it's going to be costly because the debt will somehow have to be nationalized and everybody else is going to have to take on this. So it's like I said, it's a political hot potato, but it's going to get more expensive moving forward just because they increased the interest rates. So even the student loan payments, this is something that's going to be more costly for the government moving forward. This is a mess, however you look at it.
This guy's a total dope, right? He tried to buy all the votes that he could by basically forgiving the debt, trying to go through the Supreme Court to do so. They told him to kick rocks, thank God. He also, Len, I believe, wanted to do a staggered repayment schedule, right, with some of the borrowers. I don't remember the details on that, but basically if you're under a certain threshold, you don't actually have to start repaying until, guess when? Sounds like after the election. Meanwhile, higher income earners have to start repaying sooner, right? People who may vote conservative anyways. I think if you look at the spread in the states, there's two real delineations between conservative voters and liberal voters. Again, going down a dangerous path here, but I'll do it anyways. If you look at white male voters in the states, generally it's all conservative. Other genders, races, generally Democratic. And the other one is income. Higher income generally votes for conservative, and I think that's the case anyway in most of the states, and there might be a few other ones that are generally blue anyways. Anyway, you can look all that data up. There's places to find that. But the point is that he's trying to buy votes. And I got to be honest with you, Len, much like we just had our quote unquote like workers benefit or whatever, like if you're under the poverty line, you know, it's 15 million people, whatever it was. Is it possible that, you know, your zero payment maybe will be 32,000, but how many people are going to be paying some significantly lower number than they would have been paying under a standard repayment schedule because of the legislation? Is it half the borrowers? Is it a quarter of the borrowers? It's still a lot of votes he's buying and still very stimulative. Again, hate to say this, but it's putting money in the pockets of people who I think probably will make the worst possible decision with it. If you look at all the people he could have put the money in the pockets of, right? It's clear to me. Like if you're one of these people who got a degree in, I don't know, humanities or something and can't find a job, why would I give it back to you? Like, why would I give the money back? Shouldn't I like pay for all the STEM degrees first, or the economics degrees even, or like the MBAs or whatever? Like, I don't know. Seems to me that that's a better idea. Like if the government cares at all about ROI, which obviously they fucking don't over there and probably not here either, but story for another day. That's what they would do, but they don't care. They don't care about ROI. And it's funny. Mike Campbell talks about this all the time. He's like, I always try and ask the question, what have we gotten for this so far? And I would ask that question about the loan forgiveness over there and the staggered repayments and the thresholds for zero interest or zero payments, zero payment plans. Like, what have you gotten back? The answer is nothing. Unless you're in the Democratic Party, then it was maybe votes. I guess we'll find out this coming, or I guess next fall, we'll find out. We'll see how that went.
Well, I could give you a little bit of color here too. They say that some of the borrowers could have their payments cut in half when it comes into play, but also some can see the remaining debt canceled after making at least 10 years of payment. So as long as you're able to sustain the 10 years of payment and you qualify for whatever it is here, you could have the payments then wiped off the books. So that's...
How do I feel about that? I don't know. That might be... That's not that bad. Like 10 years, I don't know. How long is
you're showing a commitment?
Yeah, I guess like you were able to keep a job for that long, like you paid taxes for 10 years, and that maybe that's like, I don't know. Like if the government
backs off the loan,
I know.
Right? Like if you look at it,
sorry, I went soft there for a second. I must have blacked out. Fuck them.
But you know, I just want to double back to the increased increase in the rates that the Federal Reserve did this past week, and this is not just the student loans, but a lot of companies out there are now going to feel a pinch. And I just want to bring up one in particular, is that Yellow Trucking Company that just today declared that they're insolvent and they declared bankruptcy. So this is the third largest trucking company in the state. So it's going to have impact on the trucking industry altogether and having goods shipped from to and from locations. This is a company that operated just fine in a low interest rate environment, and they could not operate once rates rose drastically. This could be the first of many companies that are relatively large or very large that cannot compete right now. And it's too bad, because a lot of people, they were relying on pensions from this. I saw one video, they said the pensions were no longer going to be there. And this guy went absolutely nuts, and rightfully so. People's jobs are now going to be at risk. People's freight is going to be at risk. There's so much here. And it's all because of policy coming from the Federal Reserve. And this is the only reason why this happened. But yeah. And another interesting thing I just want to bring up, truly clown world. Did you hear about this story from Subway?
No. Oh, I did. The free sandwiches if you change your name, right?
Yeah. So I would imagine, so I'll just preface this. Dude, they're going to be offering free sandwiches for life to someone who's willing to legally change their first name to Subway. So you may come across a whole bunch of people named Subway in the next little while. The contest is going to randomly choose the winner, and the winner is going to get $750 on top of the sandwiches for life, because it's going to cover the legal cost for changing the name.
So going right to Bitcoin.
This is amazing, because there's going to be so many people out there that they can't make ends meet in terms of feeding themselves. And they're going to look at this as potentially a way to get out of this and to deal with the high cost of food and groceries and all that jazz. And they're going to change their name to Subway. Brilliant move by Subway, but I suspect there's going to be a lot more people out there with the first name of Subway. And the reason why it is because they're very hungry. Food is getting too costly and they're desperate. That's the only reason why they're going to do it.
That blows me away. My favorite part about that tweet was how they basically said, like, right away, we're going to draw from all the people who changed their name. Like, pretty confident that you're going to get enough people that have changed their name. You're going to have to run like a, you know, KPMG's going to have to run a draw for you. Interesting stuff.
I was going to say, do you want to talk about the Bank of Japan or QE Infinity that just ramped up again today?
I don't really give a shit about that, honestly. We got some good Clown World North today, and I just want to one thing. In Bitcoin news, I forgot to mention this in Bitcoin news, because we talk about Senator Lummis. All the time. I'm going to share my screen here. Give me a second. I saw a tweet from the Samurai guys today that claims, again, I don't know how legit this is. I would imagine if it's coming from Samurai, that it's at least somewhat legit, that claims that Senator Lummis signed a bill that makes Whirlpool and non-custodial privacy tech illegal. And I have to look more into this, but if that's the case, to me, that makes her an enemy of Bitcoin. She's doing a lot of stuff that people like, but this idea that you can interfere in someone's privacy in the name of basically anything, there is no good reason to do this. It's upsetting, honestly, because we've given her a lot of good press and she's deserved, I think, some of it. But now when you look at this tweet, and there's quite a bit of traffic on that tweet too, in terms of replies and stuff, it looks like she's supporting bills that want to outlaw privacy tools. That's fucked up. That is fucked up. And, I'm very disappointed to hear that. I hope people get in her DMs and in her mentions about that. And I'm curious as to what Dennis Porter thinks, because Dennis Porter's a guy who's supported her a lot and he's been on our show. I've talked to him a bit here and there, and I might have to ask him, like, what's the story here? Is this legit? Am I missing something? Are these guys overreacting? But I want to know more about that. That seems to me to be significant news.
Yeah, it has AML provisions. I'm looking at it right now, and I can't speak too much about it because, you know, I'm going to read the article. And it's on CoinDesk if everybody's wanting to look at it. So it says the U.S. Senate passes a $886 billion military spending bill with crypto AML provisions. So if anyone wants to read it, there's a title. Let's go to Clown World North, and we could talk about Brr right off the bat, because this thing is going to go nuts. The money printer over here. Someone did an analysis from Health Canada for the quarantine costs for travels. Remember back a few years ago,
people hotels, yeah.
So interestingly enough, it was food, hotels, the whole nine yards. The cost for that whole program was $338 million. That equates to $17,500 per traveler who was provided a stay for 72 hours. So 3-day stay equated to over $5,000 per day. So per traveler too, mind you.
Admin costs in there too. Yeah.
That's
still a lot. Still a lot.
Incredible amount of money, man. So yeah, that was done. Also, the Canada's workers' benefits, they started going out last week. I never heard about this until just last week, this Canada worker Amazing. Benefit thing. But what it is, it's people qualified for single individuals are going to get $1,428. And this gets reduced. So as long as your income was less than $23,495, you're okay. And you're going to get this. And for families, you're going to get $2,461. And your adjusted family income is going to be less than $26,805. You qualify. The funny thing is, or not so funny, is 4.2 million Canadians in total are going to qualify for this. That's more than 10% of our population. That is less than that. That's we're getting to the point where UBI is starting to come into play, because you're going to get this workers' benefit, then you have the grocery bill rebate that came not too long ago, and all this stuff. Just there's so much money that's being come in from the government just to make people's lives to a point where they could make ends meet. They have to continue to do this, because the moment they stop, what are people going to do? They can't go hungry. They can't lose their house. They can't go broken, you know, especially as winter comes, you have to have a roof over your head in Canada. Yeah. So man, it's going to be really tough, but a lot of people out there getting money, and because it's just impossible to make ends meet given the environment we're in.
Who are they going to vote for in the next election? Are they going to vote for the party who oversaw the greatest rise in cost of living ever? or are they going to vote for the party who helps them put potato chips on the table vis-a-vis these UBI payments? If you're making under 20 grand, 30 grand, let's say, how much money have you received in the last month? 4 grand-ish, something like that?
I don't know.
Right? It's been quite a bit, I think,
between
if I remember correctly.
Climate,
this one, and the worker one. Yeah, I think there's been a lot, right? The grocery rebate, this one, and now, yeah. To me, again, we should be clear as crystal here. The PBO says all the time that there is no amount of rebates that'll ever put back in your pocket the amount of taxes you pay if you're a working Canadian. It's never going to happen. You're always going to pay more in taxes than you get back in a rebate. So that said, how are they really helping here? I've heard Polyev talk a lot about getting rid of the carbon tax on gas. I went to put gas in my car a little while ago, and it was like $1.70 a liter. That was for 87. I put 91 in my car, which maybe I should just stop doing. I have no idea why I'm doing that. I think the timing is set to 91.
Siphon hose. You go to your neighbor's house. It's free.
Yeah, exactly. It's free everywhere else. Yeah. I just got to be bigger than the guy I steal it from. And yeah. There's too many other people out at night, buddy. I don't want to be out there with them. But it's funny though, right? Like clearly there's like a Venn diagram where there's a sweet spot for the targeted recipient of these things. The recipient maybe gets all the payments but doesn't pay the carbon tax, right? Gets all the payments but doesn't have to worry about their property taxes going up by 10 or 11% in most municipalities this year. It's a weird dance they're doing. And part of that dance, I think, is making sure that the communication strategy is good. Unfortunately, the finance minister, at least in my view, has dropped the ball a couple of times in the last few days. You know, most importantly, I would say, and most publicly, unfortunately for her, this thing about her not having a car and walking to work and taking the subway when she has a chauffeur, and Blacklock's, you know, getting on top of it right away. Like, here's all the time she used a chauffeur in Toronto the last little while. Even CTV and the Globe, you know, left-leaning media outlets reporting on that. It seems to me like the shine has completely faded from the sitting government, but it doesn't look to me like they have any interest in conceding or changing directions. Does it look like that to you? I mean, you're the political mind of the two of us. My untrained eye tells me that there's not much interest in doing anything except doubling and tripling down.
There's nothing they can do. I think that what they're hoping for is that everything recovers and they're just the people in charge, and people will look at them and say, yeah, they're the ones that made this better. It was far worse a few years ago, and now things are better. We're going to reward you guys for doing a good job. But the reality is things are probably not going to improve. And it's always happened that when things get really bad, the voters punish whoever's in power, regardless if they did something to make it bad or they didn't. They just punish you. That's just the way it is. So they're in for a lot of problems come next election if things don't improve, and I don't think they will. It's just, there's going to be a change. Plus, it's been 8 years.
Ten years almost, yeah. Yeah. When do you have the Ontario mayors on Clown World North? Do you have those on there today?
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. We'll talk about housing in general. Sure. And so number one, the new housing minister doesn't agree that reducing numbers of people coming to Canada will help alleviate the housing issues. So that's
you know what he was doing before this, right?
No, immigration, wasn't he?
He was the immigration minister. So go figure, so right?
He knows both portfolios, but he's on his side of building more units to help alleviate this problem. But
where are the units? We are
some interesting news here, because somebody did some digging. Now, the people in charge here, the MPs, in fact the ministers, somebody did some research and found that 40% of Trudeau's new cabinet are landlords or real estate investors. This is up from the previous, so there seems to be a they invest in real estate. It's a hard asset. It works in Canada. And that, you know, so these are the people that are going to be driving their decisions moving forward. So they are landlords. And in fact, our previous housing minister came under fire because he was holding two rental properties in Ottawa himself. Good for him. And they have a lot of rental properties. This is good because in some way we could not only tap into their knowledge, we could tap into their resources, because Toronto Mayor Olivia Chow has suggested we ask that landlords give up their
It's unit. Not just landlords, it's residents, Toronto residents, anyone.
And so what she's suggesting is the City of Toronto will then compensate people for doing this either at market price or below market price. I don't know what constitutes going to get one or the other, but you know what? That's an interesting suggestion. I think that not many people are going to take them up. I don't know, because it's getting that bad. There's people living under bridges. This is really sad, and I don't mean to laugh, but a bunch of people actually found there was one international student was living under a bridge, and he is attending Conestoga College in Kitchener, and he was living under a bridge for fucking days. This guy came here from India to study here, and you know what? These international students, unfortunately, they're also contributing to the housing shortage. It's part of the whole problem. But this poor guy, he couldn't fucking find a place and had to live under a fucking bridge. Why do they let in so many international students? It's because it's big business, Joey.
Universities. I know why. Yeah.
And I could give you some stats. International enrollments in Ontario colleges are up 240% in just 7 years. They built almost no residential units for these college students. Also, Ontario universities, international enrollment during that same period of time is up 91%. They want to bring in more of these international students because they bring the money with them, but we have nowhere to keep them except for under bridges. This is pathetic.
I got to add here the news release today from Hamilton, our mayor, Andrea Horvath, who is on a bullshit trade tour visit in Italy. I don't know what kind of fucking trade relationship Hamilton and Italy have, except that we both got a bunch of paisans. She and her staff put together a bulletin about how Hamilton's going to start a vacancy tax, a unit vacancy tax. And the thing that I think bothers me the most about this is that there are two kinds of people, three kinds of people, let's say. People like you and me, Len, who are like, this is fucking insane. It's communism. It's my fucking house. I'll do with it what I want. The second group of people is, you know, that sort of the next level down from us in terms of understanding, thinks that this is going to be fine. It's just going to be for vacant units. It'll never, the scope will never expand or increase, which is never the case with these kinds of programs. Show me an example of any government program that's like that. And then the third kind of people, the people we talk about on the show all the time, who have nothing, have no home, can't find a place to live, rent, or buy in either case, and love this kind of legislation. They are growing in number and they vote en masse. And it's a dicey proposition to go down this road, both in Toronto with Chow's suggestion and here in Hamilton now with Horvath's suggestion. I would just remind people, I was talking to some guy on Twitter today who's completely brain dead about why this isn't an issue where you can just say, oh, greedy landlords need to be combated. There's no such group as landlords, okay? Landlords are Canadians who are in the same boat as everyone else. That boat is they know the currency is weak and they can't articulate it, but they're playing defense against the failing currency, against an inflationary regime, and against all the things that make the dollar, or the loonie, I should say, I guess, in this case.
And they're in cabinet.
I'm talking more about just like the average person. Like, you know, I'll level with you, okay? Like my old man's got a couple of properties. He's a boomer. He's got a couple of properties. He's done well for himself. But think about what the boomers have available to them, right? They're too old for the TFSA in basically every case. The TFSA is not a vehicle they can really use because, number one, chances are you'd fill it pretty quickly. And number two, boomers can't be in stocks because it's too risky. They're fixed income or no pension or whatever. And so stocks are too risky. Now, there used to be a place for bonds. We talked about the 60-40 portfolio where you're in some mix of stocks and bonds. As you get older, the allocation to bonds increases because it's supposed to be steady, right? You get that interest return to you. And that interest hasn't been good for a long time. Certainly has kept up with inflation. In recent years, obviously, it's not even close. And I suspect it'll be under inflation again in the not too distant future. But, you know, with inflation that high, they can't really be in bonds either because it doesn't make a return. they can't be in cash because cash doesn't do anything. The yield in a savings account is, you know, I think last I checked the TD, it's like 0.05%. Insanely bad, like criminally low, given the current state of affairs in the rate market. And so they're incentivized to do what? They have to find a way to get cash flow going. They have to find a way to protect the lifetime of work they've done, supporting the country, supporting the pension, supporting the healthcare system, all these things. And so they buy real estate. Why not? Seems pretty safe. They rent out the real estate at a market rate that's set by the city they live in. The province, you know, tries to keep it under control, whatever. The thing is that now, even those people aren't cash flowing positive, if I had to guess. I don't know what my old man's situation is like. I'm sure he's fine. But I think a lot of people who got into the real estate game maybe in the last 2 or 3 years took out mortgages at, you know, 1%, 2%. And now that rate maybe is 5%, 4%, whatever, if you're on variable, could be even higher than that, up to as high as 6.5%, I think, at some lenders, some of the big four, big five lenders in the country. Your cash flow negative, because as that's been happening, you also can't kick anybody out. And so now on top of that, let's say you want to have a sort of strategic role of your tenancies where you don't ever rent fully and you always have one unit under renovation, one unit empty, just to keep pace with the market rate, right? You can always move somebody in if you have to every 2 years or every year and a half or whatever. Now the province is going to tell you to, you know, the city is going to tell you to kick rocks. You got to go down with the ship. Sorry, buddy. We're going to take that. We're going to take 1% of the assessed value. They're going to
Toronto's had this for. I know they got it.
It's a shitty policy, and that this policy stings more now than ever has before. And to people who say, "Oh, well, Hamilton's just the third one to get it." Vancouver put it in for foreign buyers. This ain't for foreign buyers, morons. Okay, this is for you and your parents.
Toronto has it. It's a blanket.
Yeah, it's going to be blanket everywhere.
But Toronto has had this for a while.
That's fine. It's still shitty policy, and it still stings now more than it has before. And I'll add one more thing. If you think the scope of this is going to be 1% of the assessed property value and just units that are empty, it ain't going to be that way forever. You are going to have to fight to keep your home in the next 10 years like you've never had to fight. Between property taxes going up, between everybody gunning for your throat at the ballot box, trying to get some politician in there who will take your house from you through taxes, levies, and other nonsense, all while there's no interest at the federal level coming right from the PM today to fix the problem. Housing is not a federal issue. Well, immigration sure as shit is. That's got to be fixed. Taxes sure as shit are. That's got to be fixed. That's unfair to pin that on municipalities, homeowners, quote-unquote landlords. They're not a protected class. They're people who have no better option to protect a lifetime of work. What else are they going to go to? You've made everything else impossibly difficult, impossibly risky. This was the thing that made the most sense. Now this doesn't make sense either. What do you expect them to do? Go down with the loony? They'll leave before they do that. I suspect you're going to see a significant exodus of people who are net producers, know how to maintain a property, know how to do some of the work around building a home. These things, it's a dicey situation, man. And no one in any of these positions of power seems to get it. And if they do, they're pretending that they don't.
That group of people that own homes, it's going to get smaller and smaller. But rental homes, sure. It's going to get smaller and smaller as time goes on. Not only that, it's also going to get in the percentage lower, given the fact that there's 1 million people that came to Canada last year, and it takes 3 years of residency in Canada for somebody to apply for citizenship. You have to wait 7 times. So it will take upwards of 5 years for somebody to come here as a permanent resident to become a citizen until you could vote. But what I'm trying to get at is those people are probably not going to be homeowners. And so they're going to be part of a class that's going to be growing and growing in percentage, not just in whole numbers, but in percentage. Eventually, they'll be able to outvote anybody in the other side. Because the people that own homes, those rental properties, not only are they going to sell off for various reasons, but some pass away and things.
It's going to get more and more extreme. The policies that politicians are going to be willing to adopt, because that group of people is going to be bloodthirsty for your assets. It's not going to end, man. And
capital gains on primary residence is going to be that's going to happen. It's a low hanging fruit.
And even this thing on this thing from Horvath today, I keep on saying it's her. I don't think she's bright enough to put this together. Honestly, it's probably either her staff or the province feeding her this garbage. But I would say that the other thing is this bill has exemptions for primary residences. How long is that going to last? You think they're not going to start looking at empty rooms? Oh, you got an in-law suite and you don't have any in-laws living in there? we can fix that for you. In fact, it's illegal for you to not let us fix it for you if you don't want to get a tenant. And sometimes people, like I mentioned, don't want tenants. If you think that you're going to be able to rent, you know, if you want to wait, let's say you lock in your mortgage for 5 years, you want to wait to rent until it makes more sense, until the market catches up with you and you can be cash flow positive. You don't want to be at the mercy of these dumb 2% price caps on renting. What the province is going to force you to move somebody in, the city is going to force you to move somebody in. It fucking sounds like it. And people, I don't think, understand how serious this is. The problem will move from there's not enough places for us to live to nobody wants to build houses anymore. And then you're going to be living in government ghettos. And you know how that turns out. Okay. It's not that hard to figure this out. It's not like this is without precedent. I've seen this many times in the past, maybe not here, but other places for sure. Most of those places don't exist anymore, or they're on the gold machine gun index. You don't want to be in a system where that's happening. And it seems to me like people who are voting for this just don't have any interest in doing a tiny bit of historical research. What happens when the government owns all the housing? Well, I don't know. Have you seen the roads? Have you seen the hospitals? Have you seen the schools? That's what happens. And it's only going to get worse. If you think the housing is going to be somehow better, give yourself a kick in the ass, man. Figure this out before it's too late.
Going to do the last story because we're running out of time. Bank of Canada, they released a report called Crypto Asset Ownership and Use in Canada. This is an update for 2022. And there's some interesting info in this. Apparently, Bitcoin ownership fell in 2022 compared to 2021. So from 13.1% to 10.1% of Canadians own Bitcoin. And that's a pretty large number, 1 in 10% that own Canadians own Bitcoin. And I'll be very, very brief. The reason for buying Bitcoin, one of the items was for investment. That fell from 55% in 2021 to 37% in 2022. That's bullish. If less people are trying to look at this as an investment and looking for something else, that is great. Lack of trust is up from 10% in 2021 to 13% in 2022. So that's some of the reason why people are buying and holding onto Bitcoin. An interesting stat here, almost 40% of owners that have Bitcoin have used it for buying goods or services. They're not just simply holding on to it. Yeah, that's a very, very interesting and telling stat that it's actually being used in the real world. So if anybody wants the link for this, get in touch with me. I'll be happy to provide it to them. But it's a very, very lengthy and it's a 30-something page PDF. So pretty cool stuff.
It's a lot of fun. I love those reports. Okay, so tell me something. The CBDC report, the Canada CBDC report, we were talking with Mark about that today. I think the three of us agree that those numbers are fudged, maybe. Like, what did it say? 80% of Canadians, 60% of Canadians agree that there's this, you know, CBDC.
59%, I think it was.
Some super high number. They're like, yeah, who cares? Fuck it. Do you think they're fudging numbers on these reports? Like there's 80% positive sentiment toward a CBDC and 60% of people are ready for one right now, like whatever that number was. There's just no way that that's legit. And so I wonder what I don't know how they would fudge those other numbers, but I don't know. Is it possible also people are just wising up to not telling everyone that you have Bitcoin? Like, we should have done this show NIM. I might just go dark after this episode. Never see me
too
again.
Too late. Now let's close this.
My eyebrows or something, put on a fat suit for the rest of my life.
You know, we could just close this show, open up a new one, different channel, different name, different everything.
You got to use your phone number though.
Yeah, fuck. Okay. Well, we have a way around that. Anyways, no coiner of the week, Bitcoiner of the week. I have a no coiner. I'm not sure if you have any of the two.
Mine was going to be Horwath, but I didn't know if we were going to talk about it. But anyone who comes up with a policy that fucking brain dead will on a fake trade trip to Italy on my dime is a, you know, no coiner. That's the kindest words I could use for her. I truly hope that she takes an earful from everybody around her when she returns.
Why a mayor's traveling to Europe makes no sense to me. But anyways,
can someone point to me? What is the Hamilton trade surplus with Italy or trade deficit? Does anyone fucking know? We don't have one. Like, what are we talking about? What's going on here?
You wait for this trip to complete, then you'll have all the stats ready for you to digest. Right. That's why they went there to provide you this very information that you're asking right now. And so my no coiner of the week is Congressman Bradatoshi Sherman. And because he was out there talking about Saratoshi Nakamoto. And if you can't pronounce it correctly, Bradatoshi is my no coiner of the week.
Sherm's the best, man.
Been there, done that. So here we go. All done, wrapped up, under 1:30 is we tried.
Good job. Good Good job. Thanks for listening. Wednesday, Mark. Probably not. That's probably not his last name. Mark Morano. Thursday, Mario Gibney. And don't forget Access of Easy, where we talk about tech, security, privacy. And to be honest with you, I like doing that show a lot, man. That show used to be about 20 minutes. Now it's like stretched out to like 40 or 45 most of the time, because I think we always have so much to say.
We could do this after show is fun. So we could
try Yeah. God bless everyone. We'll talk to you soon. After show's up next.
Yeah. Take care, PV, and don't be a cuck.